Ever feel like there's a better way to build? So do we. I'm Matt, and welcome to the Mindful Builder podcast, where we believe in education through storytelling. Join me and my co-host Hamish as we both have a passion for building better, breaking barriers, and sharing our experience within the building industry. We're not pretending to know it all. In fact, we're learning right alongside you. Join us each week as we tackle complex topics like building science and mental well-being, inviting the brightest minds to connect curiosity with expertise. We want this to be a real conversation, encouraging vulnerability through honest discussions. So if you love this podcast and you're ready to join in, learn and build better, please do us a favor and subscribe wherever listening. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode, plus it really helps us out. And if you're feeling extra generous, a 5-star rating and a quick review would be amazing. Your support helps us reach new listeners and, even better, allows us to book incredible guests for the future episodes. Thank you so much for being part of our community. We truly appreciate you. And now on to this week's episode.
I think this is going to be hilariously fun because I actually have no fucking idea where it's going to go to. And in fact, we've started off completely different because we have your apprentice Ben. Here. We've got Ben, your apprentice here. And we didn't get him to fill out a form or anything. He's just like an ad hoc, like a guest that's going to be here. So this is awesome. It's almost exactly how I thought this was going to go.
Yeah, okay, sweet.
Joel and Ben.
This is all about Ben.
Oh, it's all about Ben.
We are making this all about Ben.
Yeah, this is actually your review. So it's your quarterly review.
Depending on how you go, you'll either get your apprenticeship extended or you'll get signed off. I'm kidding. I'm not
fucking that wouldn't happen. What'd you do to your shoulder?
Tore the supraspinatus.
Yeah.
So it was torn, and then I was like, oh, you know what? I'll try and rehab it. And typical, made like the shitty attempts at trying to rehab it across like a few months and just fucking made it worse.
So yeah.
Then got to a point where I couldn't sleep, and then I was trying to turn the wheel in my car with my right arm, and I was like, oh, fuck, that hurts. So I thought, yep. Time to get checked out.
And they've obviously gone in and fixed it now. Like, was it a big tear?
Yeah, so it was like a high grade tear, 2/3 of the way through, 12 centimetres.
Any bicep stuff as well?
No bicep stuff, but there was a spur on the bone that they have to like shave back as well.
I'm only asking because we had the same surgeon.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He's got a really good rep.
Does the surgeon want to sponsor the podcast too?
No. Oh, yeah, should we give a shout-out to DeWalt? We just got given drills. Like, this is
the
first thing that we've ever received from this podcast.
There you go, really? Should,
yeah, absolutely.
Each guest we get to fill out a form.
Yeah.
And there's one word here, or not one, one sentence here. I'm just an average carpenter and builder lost in a world of red tape. What do you mean by that?
I love that. I actually thoroughly enjoyed reading through your response.
Yeah, it's a bit. Yeah. Of all the guests, we've got best answers.
Yeah, best answers.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Well, there might be heavily influenced by the painkillers that I've been on. So
yeah,
I'll make a little bit more loose sleep. Yeah, they're in the car. Let's do it. Yeah, what do I mean by that? When I did my apprenticeship or started my apprenticeship, it was a totally different thing to be a builder, what it is now. You know, you could be a builder with a diary in the ute. That was what my boss did. He would organise everything, you know.
Simple times.
So simple, man. Like, and you were on site, boots on the ground, ordering materials, picking this up. You'd call the plumber and say, you know, Barry, can you get to this job Monday, 2 weeks from now? He'd be like, yeah, no worries, mate. He'd go there. He'd be there and he'd do the job. And if something was like a little bit different than what he quoted, he'd be like, yeah, it's all good, mate. You know, like, or, you know,
swings and roundabouts.
Yeah. You know, you just work it out between yous. Whereas, yeah, being a builder now, man, there's so much admin. Like, when I got into it, I didn't get into it to sit behind a desk.
Yeah.
Like, I was just talking to Matt earlier and he's saying he loves being behind a desk and loves...
Well, it suits a certain personality type, I reckon. Mm. What do you reckon's changed?
Shitloads. Like, what hasn't changed?
Do you reckon it's those people, like, making high-performance windows which have now...
Yeah, those guys are the enemy.
Should we give context around that or just let people kind of guess?
No, just let them guess.
Okay, we'll let them guess. We'll bring that up.
He's later. Already annoyed that he got on the you're on the podcast first. Yeah, before.
I actually talked to him yesterday.
He's actually shitty.
Yeah.
I told Andre, I'm like, it's because you're fucking boring. I'm like, you got to be, like, you know, get up there a bit more.
So Joel is Andre from Bing's brother.
Yeah.
So, Andre's the boring one. They were your words.
Andre is the boring one.
Andre's the smart one, actually.
The smart, boring one.
He's the smart one, and he's a bit more conservative, which, you know, makes him a bit more boring.
So, yeah,
Andre's words to me were, oh, you'll enjoy him. He's a bit loose. I'm like, yeah, now we're going to have fun.
He's dead. I now hope that Andre changes his like little email tab at the bottom to Andre, director, the boring one. Or
The smart one.
Yeah,
he's always been the smart one.
So red tape, what's changed? Because you've been in the industry for how long now?
Oh, well, I started my apprenticeship when I was 18, straight. I actually went to RMIT doing building design and flunked everything.
Yeah.
And realised like, oh, I know, I'm just doing this because my dad wants me to go to, you know, university. And eventually I actually had a design teacher named Andrew Rodder, right? And he used to come in there and we'd have this design class. He'd give you a design brief and you'd have to draw, you know, something to the brief. And I draw it, and then when you draw it, you also had to present it in front of the class like you were presenting to your client. One day towards the end of the first semester, he sat me down and said, do you mind hanging back? I said, yeah, all right. So we hang back, and he goes, can I ask, like, what do you want to do career-wise? And I'm like, I don't really know, you know, like. He goes, do you want to be, an architect? And I said, oh, I actually really wanted to be a builder. I said, but my dad wanted me to go to uni, so here I am. He goes, right. He goes, because you can't draw. I'm like, yeah, I fucking know. He goes, I feel compelled to pass you. He said, because every time you present the drawings, you present them with such conviction, I end up believing in the fucking design. So you've probably got something there, but maybe this isn't your path. I'm like, thank you.
The fact that you remember this guy and he's had such a like profound impact on your career direction, yeah. Like I think you've got a lot to thank him for.
Being honest. I actually called him a couple of years ago and thanked him. You know, and I said, you won't remember me. And, you know, he's like, you're the guy
that can't design.
Yeah. He's like, I remember you. The one guy that came to my class that couldn't draw. I guess I, you know, make a short story long. We got into building to be a tradesman, to be on site, to build houses and just make things and enjoy that process. But there's so much that goes on in the background now, especially with compliance. It just makes it really difficult if you're a one man band, so to speak. And which I sort of am as a builder. Yeah. I don't have a business partner, or I didn't have like a full solid crew that offers support.
Yeah.
And that was that. And then I guess COVID came through, which made it post-COVID and the big build, which made it really difficult to get trades on site. And jobs just blew out.
I remember talking to your brother just after COVID, maybe 22, 23, and he mentioned that you had just decided, I'm done with this sort of single project resi stuff, like it's too hard. I think you even mentioned that you spent a couple of years working for nothing just to pay.
Yeah, what I was literally writing down then is one of his quotes that you've written, and it's, I'm going to quote, post-COVID, I worked for 2 years straight to lose over $1 million.
Yeah. Yep.
And that story, as shit as it is not in isolation either. Like I guarantee that there are dozens, if not hundreds of other builders out there that would have been the same thing. Like I reckon we just broke even throughout COVID.
Yep.
And we're still stupid enough to be here right now as builders.
Yeah.
Recently, you're pretty prolific on social media. I think that's how we...
It's funny.
You're fucking hilarious. Like I think I, personally from my side, I'm really engaged by it because it's so true to me.
Yeah.
Like probably my personality, we're all cut from the same cloth of personality types here.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you're really struggling with going in for this surgery because you're like, my whole identity is being a carpenter, being on the tools with a team, and I'm really struggling. I'm really not looking forward to this next part of my life where I am literally forced to sit on the sidelines.
Yeah.
How are you now? I mean, 2 days post, I know you're probably not thinking quite clearly with all the pain meds, but like how are you viewing the next few weeks?
Yeah, I'm trying to use it as an opportunity to bring the other guys up and, you know, give them a bit of rope and not be overbearing or controlling. I would always give them an opportunity, and then as soon as one little thing would go wrong, that would like vindicate me to say, no, see, I need to be doing it.
Yeah.
Whereas now I don't really have a choice.
Can I get your feedback on that, Ben? Like what's he like? Oh. No, be honest. No. Like, I feel like you've got
Yeah, you're kidding.
Full agency to be honest here, because I think this kind of like hands-on apprenticeship from a builder's point of view, I think is really valuable, and I think my apprentices have probably not got that from me. Like, I think if I was on site, that potentially turn out to be different carpenters, and I think
better or worse.
I'm going to be careful, but probably not how I would have trained them.
Yeah,
because that's my business and it's how I want them to do things in a certain way. Like, I'm completely hands off now.
Yeah,
I think you're in a really amazingly unique situation where you're learning from someone who's super passionate, and I'm keen to know how do you understand like the situation you're in and like how grateful you potentially could or should be?
Watch what you say, Ben.
Yeah, definitely. Oh,
yeah, great answer. All right, move on now. Yep, well done.
There's definitely plenty of growth at Heidi Build. Yeah. Like, I don't think I could really get this at any other company.
Not with the same passion from Joel.
Yeah, definitely. Like, even before I worked at Heidi Build, the way Joel actually got me to work for Heidi Build. Originally, I was a bit skeptical on it because I worked through my old boss.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, you're not going to learn anything like this anywhere else. And I was like, all right.
How did you guys come? How did you?
So Ben was actually on loan with me through a mate.
Yeah.
A mate was like a little bit quiet. And so he was subbing, you know, Ben to me and one of his other chippies because we were really flat out. And one day Ben actually came to site, and again, I'm not on the tools full time, but when I am, you know, I'm up with them about everything.
Yeah.
So Ben comes to site one day, you know, sort of dragging his feet and a little bit lackluster, you know.
So it's classic apprentice trait at some point.
Yeah. Oh, look,
I think everyone has those
days. Yeah. Drag the feet.
And I said to him, listen, man, I said, if you want to be here, fucking pull your head in, you know, get your mind in the game and apply yourself. I said, because we're doing dangerous shit all the time and I don't want someone with me that's not got their head in the game. Like, if something falls, I want someone to watch my back as well. And I said to him, I said, you either come here and you want to learn and we'll teach you. I said, oh, don't bother. And honestly, after that, there was like one chat and it was like a switch just flipped, and he's like 20 minutes early every day, buys shitloads of tools, you know, actually invest in his career. And
do you buy tools? We just get given them.
Ben actually had to buy our DeWalt tools.
That was what happened. And then, you know, Ben was sort of thinking about leaving and this and that. And I ended up telling him, say, look, man, you know, I don't put on apprentices anymore. I you know, and he knew that. I said, but I'll put you on, because I said, you've been really impressive. Like, you rock up early, you know, you do what's asked of you, you work back if we need, you know, you ask questions. And then...
Has he got an old school attitude? Like this, like, and don't talk for a second, but do you know what I'm talking about? Like, when you were taught as an apprentice, because I feel generations have sort of changed, a little bit softer. Is he...
He's not precious.
Yeah. So it's
so he just does whatever needs to be done or what's asked of him.
Within reason, and he'll speak up when he feels like he doesn't need to.
Yeah, like, no, I think so.
I feel like you can give constructive, very clear feedback in a safe environment. Yeah.
It doesn't need to be yelling.
It doesn't have to be yelling, like, no. But I still feel like we should, as business owners or teachers or lead carpenters or whatever, should be able to give feedback without prejudice and without feeling like there's going to be a kickback from it.
It's at their best interest.
I feel like there is a little bit of that kind of treading on eggshell a little bit. Like, I used to just get fucking yelled at.
Oh, man.
Like, there was like...
shit thrown at you.
Hammers and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And I've chosen not to go down that path because I don't think it's the way to do it. But, like, I certainly fucking learn a lot.
Yeah.
From being in that environment.
Yeah, like, it was a school of hard knocks, and it doesn't have a place now
in
society anymore. And there are good things about it, but there was also a lot of shit things about it too. Like, I was lucky, my boss was pretty strict, but he was fair as well.
You can still be strict. It's like Hard Knocks, you can still be strict, but it's the vocabulary and the body language around that.
Yeah, it's been good having Ben on. Like, he's not far off being qualified now. What do you got?
Yeah.
2 years, depending on the answers of these podcasts.
So, but like I said, I think it's about that no bullshit approach.
Yeah.
Like, he comes to work, no ego, no issues.
Yeah.
And we can spend the time teaching him. And like, he works alongside with Luke, Sean, guys that are really skilled and experienced as well. And what I try to do now when I'm scheduling, I'll be like, no, I want Ben on this because that's a fix with these hardwood arcs or this colonial profile. I want him doing that. Or we're pitching a roof here, put him with Luke.
Yep. So and have a go and own the opportunity, because everyone's had to be in a situation where there's a risk of fucking up. And I'm sure Joel's not going to put you in a position where he hasn't reconciled in his own mind that there might be a fuck up. So just have at it, have a go at it, because you always have to do something for the first time.
Mm.
And you, as a business owner, need to give your apprentices an opportunity to do something for the first time.
Yeah.
And make mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's part of it.
How are you going to navigate this now? Like, you know, I know, as I said, this social media post was, you know, it resonated with me because I went through the same thing with a wrist reconstruction.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of was at a point where I couldn't be on the tools because it was fucking painful.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't move it. It was fucked for about 6 months.
Yeah. I've got a really good back end system, which gives us a lot of reliability, and the boys have all the details that they need. I just literally needed to let go.
Yeah.
And it's forced me to do it. So I've done it. It seems to be working well so far.
2 days in.
Yeah. Yeah.
What projects do you take on? Because you don't do big renovations in...
Nah, so we just do smaller jobs now. Basically everything. I work for some national clients. We do some commercial sort of stuff. I've done hospo fit outs.
Yeah. Powder room renovations where you put the toilet not center of the...
Oh, man, that fuck. I absolutely... Did you see that?
Yeah. Who did that? Was that one of
you? That was me. It was my house. So I'm renovating my house. And I'm so bad with that stuff. Like, I even called out my Sparky because he put the light slightly off center. And I walked in. I'm like, hey, Horvath. I'm like, is that like slightly out? And he's like, no, it's in the center. I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. And then I sort of turned back around. I'm like, do you mind just measuring it quickly? And he's like, rolls his eyes, like, yeah, all right. And he measured it and he starts laughing. I'm like, what? He goes, it's 4 mil out. He's like, do you want me to move it? I'm like, if you don't mind. And I've done that, but then the toilet's out.
But there is a reason the toilet's out. You didn't want to
cut the joist.
You didn't want to cut the slab.
Yeah. I didn't want to cut the slab. And then I didn't want to put one of those offset things, because, you know, they restrict the...
Yeah, the shit.
The shit. Yeah.
Restrict the shit.
And, man, one of my kids, dude, he drops big ones.
So when, like, you mean small stuff, are you saying, like, you do, like, a full fit out of, like, just architrave skirting, or you still take, like, small renovations?
Yeah, smaller renovation works, and we just pick and choose a bit of stuff that comes through.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I actually did, right? I got out of building because I said to myself and I said to my wife, I'm like, this building business is no longer a good business. Like, it's just not a good business. It's shitty cash flow. It's lumpy. It's super high risk. There's a shitload of liability, which all of my assets are attached to. And the returns were just dwindling.
Mm.
I'm like, not all things. Like, I'll take a couple of shit things with something good, but I'm like, no, this has all become shit. So I just said, no. I've been in business myself for, like, 18 years, or at that time, like, 15, 16 years. I'm like, is this a good business? No, it's not a good business. So let's get out of this. And I opted to change the business. I went down from – we had 12 guys. We went down to 4.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of guys left because they didn't want to do the smaller stuff. They wanted to do architectural.
It's fine.
Which is fine, yeah. I had no hard feelings. And but I said, no, but this is a better business model. The margins are a bit better. The cash flow is way better. The risk is way reduced. It's mitigated and spread out across different, you know, projects.
So you had a big truck and earth moving equipment. Like, I love that truck that you've got. I'm like, how can I justify buying one of those?
So it's a really old truck, and how I did it really asked about. So I wanted to buy an excavator, started looking at a little, but I kept having a tough time with earth moving guys. And yeah, I just said, I can do this myself. So I said, I'll buy a little 1.7 ton. And then I'd sort of got carried away, bought a 3.5 ton machine. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I can't transport this thing. So I went and bought a small truck, from Sydney, used that a bit. And I'm like, I keep sort of going over capacity of the truck. I'm like, I might need a bigger truck. So I bought the Kenworth. And
have you seen the?
It's like a proper like.
It's like a proper
yeah, proper bogey, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the East Plant type of truck. Yeah, like,
yeah. It's a cab over with a 10 meter body on it. So.
And that's your get around car.
Yeah, man, it's a daily.
Pop down the shops.
Yeah, so no, I'd actually restored it. It only cost me like 70 grand.
That truck.
Right.
That's beautiful. Actually, it's a dunner. Like it's old and rattly, and yeah. You know, but it looks cool.
It does look very cool. So you got a 3.5 tonne that you.
Okay. We just do our own earthworks.
Do you regret not buying a 5-tonner?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
But then you want the 7.5, and then you want the 10, and then
I'll get the 3.5, and then I'll get an 8, and that would be great.
Yeah. So my argument to that is that if anything like 3.5 or a 5, both need to be floated.
Yep. I'm so different. I'm almost like outsourced it.
Yeah.
I'm the complete opposite of the scale.
Yeah, but what about I know.
No, it
makes sense.
Yeah, like, I'm not a toys person. Like, I'm dressed in my RM Williams and chinos. Like, I'm a builder that's not typical. You guys got your boots on and it's just like I don't.
I've got my Nikes on, but I also have a 5-ton machine. So
You nice. also have a huge storage space. Like, I live in a city. Like, I can't even park my car at the front of my house.
Yeah, but see, the irony of that is you'd be a more successful builder than me because I spend all this time in a machine.
So define success because this is a really
making profit.
Yeah, so like the thing is, I think the issue with success at the moment in building is like, oh, you got heaps of Instagram followers, oh, you got a lot of likes. Yeah. That's now defined as a successful builder. Are you making money? Are you doing jobs you like? Do you get along with the clients? Like, because I can tell you now, there are jobs where we didn't make as much money as we wanted to. There are projects we didn't enjoy as much as we wanted to. Is that successful? I don't know.
Well, I actually think there's an inverse relationship between Instagrammability and profitability.
I can tell you 100% that's
correct.
The
more Instagrammable your jobs are, the less likely you are to make money on them.
Because
I had some fucking Instagrammable jobs.
Yeah, I actually came across one of them the other day, and I'm like, and it wasn't through your Instagram account. It was just happened to be an architect that I follow, and I'm like, oh, fucking Joel built that one.
Oh, yeah.
It was down sort of Torquay kind
Ocean
of
Grove?
Ocean Grove.
That's Pete's place.
Yeah.
Yeah, Peter Steele.
Yeah,
Weisbrock.
Yeah, it's a beautiful.
It's almost like the higher the value of the contract, the less likely you are to make money.
Yeah, because like the margins erode and so much money gets spent on the spec.
And contract admin. Were you all on Abbey contracts, were you? Or
no, so I actually would melt when I saw an ABIC contract and I was like, look, if I don't fucking understand it, I'm not signing it and I'm not paying someone $4,000 to tell me that they understand it.
Mm.
So, and the lawyers don't understand them
and either. They don't understand them either. You know, it's – we used to basically go with a HIA contract.
Yeah,
same.
You know, attach a bunch of things to it. And a lot of architects don't like it and I can understand why. They're not really geared towards architects and ABIC contracts are. But, yeah, the building a house is – difficult enough as it is. And my theory was, I'm like, oh, I just want to be on site.
Maybe contracts aren't profitable for a builder at all. The moment you have retention, you're behind the eight ball. We've got to sign off on it for 10 years. That's enough risk we have to take.
Yeah.
Now you got to add cash flow that we've been removed from. I'll be honest, I'm not going to go with him in the future. Yeah. I have a strict something that I've said to myself I won't be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair enough. I wouldn't do them either.
It's nothing personal against the architects. I think it's just from a basic business standpoint, they make no sense from a building construction.
Are all your brothers entrepreneurial?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. We sort of fell
even the boring one
backwards.
Even the
Andre's. Oh, he's never going to let me live this down.
Yeah, go,
he's
go, go, go. Let's go.
Crack it with me.
Let's go.
When we started Bink, right?
So, because you were a part of Bink or are a part of Bink?
I'm not anymore. I sold out, and it's my brothers have. So two of my brothers have it now, and actually one of my brothers, my oldest brother Brendan, his son is the general manager. Ashley.
Ash.
And Ash is actually got to be their secret weapon, I reckon, because he knows that business.
Yep.
Back to front.
Yeah, we deal with Ash quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. And but yeah, when we started,
what did you just?
I just messaged Andre saying the quote. Andre's not going to like this.
Oh, brilliant! That's going on social media.
I'm going to cover from him for sure. I'm on the next time I order windows from him, they're going to go. The price is going to go up. When we started Bink, my brother Arnie, who is no longer in the business either, he sold out even earlier than me. He's actually a singer.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to get better. And I feel like I'm actually stealing Andre's thunder now because this is his story now.
No, don't worry about it.
He's boring anyway. He's not coming on the podcast.
You know, when Andre comes on, don't talk about that. We've already talked about that one.
So Arnie wanted bifold doors for his house. We went looking around. He went looking around. He couldn't find any for like a decent price. Decided to make them himself. Made them himself, like stood back, had like a Colourbond moment, and he's like, that's fucking great. He goes, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to sell these on eBay. He listed them on eBay, and they sold for like $4,500, and they would have cost him like two something.
Yeah.
And he's like, fuck, I just made really good money. So he's like, well, I better make another one. So he made another one, and then I'm like, bro, you can't make like bifold doors with just a top and bottom track. You need a jam, like a frame.
Oh, he just made the doors?
He just machined the doors with a little Makita 7 1/4 to put the seal grooves in, and then just screwed like Herloin Centaur hardware on. Yeah, it's crazy. And he sold it, but I'm like, no, you need to sell it with a frame. So he's like, well, I don't know how to do that. So I went to Tile Importers in Clayton, bought like some timber, machined up a door jam with a seal, and he sold it again. And then we were like, fuck, let's just do this again. So we did it a third time. Someone missed out on the auction and goes, hey, I missed out on this auction. Can I just buy one for the same price? We're like, yeah. So that was the first order. And then someone would message us through eBay and be like, oh, I need these bifolds, but I also need a pair of French doors. And as Arnie's about to say, no, I can't. I'm like, no, I can do the French doors. I'm like, I know how to do that. It's easy.
They're like, easy. So, they're way easier.
Way easier. So we did some French doors, and then someone asked for a sliding door, and basically, he had a tandem carport in East Malvern, and when it rained, we would be throwing sawdust in the front to stop water coming through and getting onto the timber. And we basically outgrew this tandem carport within a couple of months. So he's like, I need a factory. So he leased a factory, and at this stage, I was subbing as a chippy. So I said to my boss, and I'm like, I got to quit. I've just started a window company. And we're doing this, and then I started doing like site measures, and then I'm trying to do a quote and make it look fucking professional as a carpenter. And I'm like, fuck, this is so difficult on Excel, you know?
It would have been paint back in the day, Microsoft Word.
It was Excel. I was trying to do it on Excel, right, because I wanted formulas. And I'm like, this is fancy. Not working.
E equals A plus B.
I'll fucking call Andre. So I called Andre because Andre's got a degree in programming and stuff, and I asked him, he came to give us a hand. Arnie went away, Andre came to help during that time. And then my other brother, Brendan, was like in between jobs. And we're like, man, we're busy, come and help us, we'll pay you. So we all sat down at my mum and dad's over Christmas and said, let's do this. Like, let's go together, four brothers. And that's how Brothers Incorporated started.
Oh, I was literally just going to ask where the name came from.
Yeah. Actually, Andre asked him that once. Yeah. So is it ironic now that the two that started the business now are no longer involved?
Yeah, well.
The guys that know the window or knew the window system.
Well, the funny thing is none of us knew really anything about windows and doors. So we had no business starting a window business. And it was off the back of
Black Saturday. Does anyone have any business?
That's how good businesses start, disruptors.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, you should be a joiner or something and come through the trade. Like, it'd be like someone picking up and just becoming a carpenter. You know, you're sort of, it's a bit.
But you look at it from a different perspective. I think when you enter an industry that you're not used to, you remove a lot of the, oh, that's how I've always done it. So you just cut the bullshit and went to it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And we learned pretty quickly that there wasn't much we could learn about windows and doors in Australia, so we ended up going. Me and Andre went to Germany and did a.
He's just replied.
Yeah. Blind.
What a flog.
Blind ignorance, honestly, is the best start of any success story in a business. Yeah. I reckon it's like if you knew what you knew back then, there's no fucking way you would have done it.
Yeah.
But like just having the like, oh yeah, I can do that.
Oh, man.
Young, you had nothing to lose.
Honestly, they're killing it now. Like, they're doing really, really well.
He's now cracked it. This is bullshit. I put in all the work and Bugalug swans in for the glory.
Yeah. Oh, and you should just say that we're just hearing the story about how Big started now.
They just stole your thunder.
Oh, we don't need you to come in anymore on that. All right, so you're not part of Bink anymore. I mean, like, full disclosure, I use Bink on almost 100% of my projects now. Yeah. Like, customer service, quality of Windows, like.
Let's just go people. Like, just I'm going to pull back for a second. I'm actually going to say Andre. I go to Bing for Andre.
Yeah.
I'm going to be straight out.
Yeah. I mean,
he might be boring, but
yeah, but he's super diligent. And that's just, he's like really methodical.
And listens, and, though. Yeah. Listen, the amount of feedback that we've given them over the last 2 or 3 years about the Aluplast Windows and the fact that he's got one of my team in there doing like tests in the rig.
I saw that.
Now. Yeah. And I'm like, not many people do that. Like, we're like, this is shit. This is not working. You need to change it.
He's put his balls on the line.
And he's like, okay, great. You moved away from architectural stuff. Have you regained the passion now?
Yeah, but in a totally different way, I think.
Yeah, okay.
This whole social media thing really came about, again, I guess.
Not surprised.
There's a fucking pattern in my life.
You just take the you're essentially taking the piss out of the building industry.
There's a couple of things that like you guys do or have done and the sort of stuff that you do. And I take the piss when I talk to Andre, actually, because he's always talking about Passive House and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, fuck Passive House, man. I'm like, I'm going to start my own thing. I'm going to call it Active House. It's a house where you've got to do shitloads to maintain it. I guess my passion really is the craftsmanship side of things, or trying to lift the standard, but in a different way than what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
I think that's what I've realised. I'm trying to advocate for trades, for that lifestyle. I mean, as a young kid, that's the reason I got into
trade. You're bringing happiness back into a trade. We advocate for building better. You're trying to, I'd say, lift the standard of the anxiety, mental health aspect of construction.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, we try to have a good time
Fun way. Like, it doesn't need to be boring.
No, that's right. Like, we genuinely have a fucking hoot at work.
I mean, you obviously love the craft.
Yeah.
And are you hoping that you can get back into being on the tools once? Like, do you think this is like a kind of sliding door moment for you where you could go one way or another? Go full business and maybe get sort of drawn away from the connection with site? Because I feel like I'm there now and I don't – it kind of suits me where my life is with three kids and all that kind of stuff. But do you feel like you would end up back on site?
Well, for me, if I could not have to do the stuff that I don't like doing within the business, which is a lot of the back end admin, and I'm lucky that Lauren is really good at a lot of that stuff, then I probably would just find myself more on site.
Yeah.
But not on site to be up the guy's ass. I'd be on a site that I want to be on. Yes and no. Like, you know, I think renovating my house, even just the bathroom or the pergola, I've been able to put a lot of creative input into it.
Yeah.
Choose certain things. Like, I'll be like, I don't want brackets there. So I'll call Simpson and I'll be like, listen, I need these screws. And then I'll send it to the building surveyor.
Yeah.
Say, look, I want to sub these out for this so I don't have these visible brackets. So I'll keep working it and tweaking something to make it better.
Yeah.
And I like doing that on my own project. So I prefer to probably just renovate my house. We've got a block of land out in Currumburra that we're going to build a house on.
Beautiful.
So I want to build that. Like, I think ideally I'll have the cash flow business and then I'll do my own property stuff. It'll be the dream, right?
Like, you know, like some of my favourite moments, like on the tools recently, has been 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday. And I think I've talked about this before. I made these gates for our food forest out of reclaimed hardwood studs. And like, I don't want to get all fucking woo-woo and all stuff, but I was fully in flow state for like 3 or 4 hours, just in the zone, and I was just like loving it. I'm like, I miss this.
Yeah, it's cathartic.
I miss this, yeah. And it doesn't happen much, but some of my happiest times are just lost in doing a task like that.
Yeah. I think that's where I would like to be, you know, doing that sort of stuff. I think, you know, I don't want to be – I'd never be – you know, the guy jumping into a Porsche, I don't think, and, you know, just sipping lattes or going on, you know, holidays and stuff like that. Not that I don't like a Porsche. I prefer the older ones, though. But, yeah, I'm more hands-on.
Yeah.
I like doing that
But stuff. You're allowed to be. Like, you, like, I think that's the beauty of you having your own business. You can choose. Like, you get the luxury of being like, it's a little wet today. I'm going to go do the paperwork, or sun's out, or I'm going to start, I know, I'll jump on the tools with the boys and or girls and have a bit of fun.
We read in, I kind of want to go back to like before all of the construction stuff started, before being all that kind of stuff. And I think I remember you wrote growing up in commission housing.
Yeah.
Like, what was your childhood like?
So it sounds worse than four brothers.
Yeah.
There's actually five brothers.
Yeah.
So there was four of us in the business.
Jeez, your poor mum.
Oh man. Yeah.
Like, just knowing you and Andre, I'm like, your poor mum.
Yeah, and Andre's like, Andre's definitely the most sensible out of all of us.
Fucking hell.
Brendan's, like, Brendan and I are really similar. Like, he's a lot more calm.
Yeah.
But, you know, really Australian. Like,
yeah,
just love camping, going bush, four-wheel driving, all that stuff. But Arnie's crazy as well. Like, he's a loony tune.
What's he do?
He's a singer.
Yeah, he's a singer.
Yeah. So he's super creative as well. Yeah. Like, you should see the shit he wears sometimes when he comes to a party. Like, my wedding, he wore a baby blue suit, right? And it actually looked good on him. Like, anyone else,
you'd
be like,
if you rock that,
he owns it, you know? So, but yeah, it sounds worse than it is. We grew up in a commission house. We were the last commission house in our block. You know, everyone else owned their own sort of homes. And I think that was the contrasting thing for me growing up, you know, not having much. Like, my dad was a tram driver.
Yeah.
And
were your parents born here?
So they immigrated from Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
In 84.
Both parents?
Yeah.
And it kind of goes back to what we were
doing. All my brothers were born there, actually.
Oh, really?
I was the first one born here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the story of Hard Knocks. Like, when you talk about, like, with apprentices and sometimes you've got to have it not easy to get ahead.
Yeah, I think I grew up, like, sort of not having, but seeing all these other kids that did have this stuff. And, you know, my parents were pretty good to me. Like, they provided always for us. But you'd see all these tradesmen living this lifestyle and being, in an immigrant family.
Yeah.
You'd see these, like, Aussies going around in, like, mad utes or, like, you know, XYGTs, like, jet skis.
Yeah.
I remember there was this guy down the road. He had a blonde, like, spiky hair and a mullet, and he had a Silverado ute back then, and these number plates were Tax Sucks. I was like, that guy's the coolest guy ever. I want to be him. All right,
so you bought a Kenworth.
Just short the blonde hair.
But it goes back. But this also then loops back to what we talked about, like the building business. And is it profitable? Like, you see so many tradies driving around in the most brand new jet ski
Tundras.
Yeah, like, are they actually like? Are they understand? Like, do they? Are they making the money? Like, I think there's a visual, false narrative around a lot of these things that people see that, and like, do they actually have the money they day to day?
No, they don't. I think a lot of guys get themselves into a world of hurt with finance. You know, they really don't understand the money side of things. I mean, I'm really lucky. Money just made sense to me from a young age. And again, Andre's influence actually helped with that. He's always really switched on with money. So I learned a lot about it from really early on, and learned what to do, what not to do, where to take risks. And
because there is this kind of sort of default response saying, oh, it's a tax write-off.
Yeah, it's
like that. Okay, the answer is yes, it is. But you also need to have the money to pay for the thing that you've got.
Yeah, there's like, profit and then there's cash. Like, do you have both?
Yeah.
Because you can have profit without the cash.
Yes.
You know, as I'm sure you guys are painfully aware of as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I think being a business so young taught me.
It's like, I made all this money, but where is it?
Yeah, it's reinvested into something else or it's in work in progress. Oh, it's the worst thing as a builder.
Yeah.
That WIP figure is
scary.
Horrific.
And then you've got to pay your BAS, and then you've got to pay your PAYG. Yeah. And then I always say, if you're paying tax, you're making money.
Yeah.
Like, it's really simple. The more tax you pay, the more money you're making.
Yeah, funny. My accountant says that too. I'm like, yeah, but either I'm paying fucking tax or I'm paying you. I'm not doing both. Look, yes, it's a tax write-off, but it's still your money. That's not a fucking, you know, a license to just go and buy whatever you want for no good reason. I mean, Okay, yeah, I bought the Tundra. I've been in business myself for 19 years, man. You know,
I was making fun of the Tundra.
Right? Yeah,
I actually think in my logical brain, a car like that, if you're towing a lot or you're moving stuff around, 100% makes sense.
Yeah,
100% makes sense.
Look, I mean, I could do it with the Hilux, you know, no problem. I bought it for me. I had I spoiled myself on that one thing. And I said to my wife, I'm like, I've flogged myself for 2 years to go backwards. We've turned this thing around. I'm like, I'm rewarding myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm under no misconceptions. I've rewarded myself quite a lot actually through my career, if I think about it.
What's the dumbest thing you bought?
My HK. I bought it and I told Lauren, I'm like, look, I'm going to spend like 70 grand with this thing all up, doing it up, and it's going to be worth 120. I completely inverted the figures. and then some. Like I blew up 3 motors in it.
You still own it?
Yeah. Well, I can't sell it. I'll realise the loss and that'll hurt more than anything.
Yeah, okay. No.
That's probably one of the...
But it was a tax write-off though.
that one. In case the ATO is listening, I do not claim anything to do with that car.
Only because it's invoiced against something else.
Yeah. No. So that's probably one of the dumbest things I reckon I've bought from a financial aspect. I probably... And as even at Bank and stuff, we'd spend too much reinvesting in the business. And I'm a guy that likes to bring things in-house and control stuff. So, yeah, the excavator, the truck.
Controlling. You know. This is actually – I want to stop for a second. Do you find him controlling?
No, not at all.
Really?
Not really.
If there was an aspect that you could say, an open space, safe space, that you can give him feedback now that you feel that he could come to you and be less controlling to advance your apprenticeship – what's something you'd give him?
There's not much really, like, because there's a lot going on at ID Build, so he's not really there all the time. Like, he's always there in the background doing stuff, but there's not really anything he could do to make it better, I don't reckon.
There's always something you can do to make something better.
I think it's not wrong. It's a great response.
Like, it is a good response.
From what I've seen and what I know about ID Build, like, I think you're in a great, just to you, Ben, you're in a great position to learn a lot. Like, you're not just doing framing, you're not just doing fix.
You're getting doing exposure. This. Yeah.
You're doing everything. And you're probably not an expert at framing now. You're probably not an expert at fixing now. But what you've got is this amazing bag of tools that you can then carry on in your next phase of life, which is probably what you've done too. Like, we're probably of a similar generation of builders or carpenters where we did everything.
Yeah.
We didn't just do framing, we did everything. We dug holes, we did a little bit of plumbing, clean bricks, did the whole works. So now you're kind of applying all of those different skill sets. And trust me, there will come a time in your life where I go, fuck, I'm so glad I did my apprenticeship with Joel.
And you like this, I'd say what, we're 43 minutes into this conversation, the learnings that you get from the mistakes that he made, where, as you said, he's lost $1 million in 2 years. Like, you get to prevent yourself of a $1 million loss over that time. Like, you get the information that he passes on to you is so valuable that you're young. You're not going to see it straight away, but long term, like, the benefit that you get with the one-on-one love is...
There's also a 100% chance that you're going to take on a job one day that you'll lose money on.
Yeah. There's a 100% chance right that all three of it... All, you know what? There's still pretty much 100% chance that all three of us here will probably do the same thing. That project looks good. I'll do that one.
And then
you start running the numbers like, oh, if I just take that out, and then later on you're like, why the fuck did I take that out? Yep. I needed that.
Yeah, we all do it every time. You get a little bit of pressure and you want to win the job, you want to close the deal and you...
What's your saying, Hamish? What's the perfect project?
Oh, your last one.
No, the one where the architect gets their project.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Everyone, win, 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 win.
Yeah.
Win, win, win. Client gets a house built, we make money, the architect gets their home, the design built.
Yeah.
I want to just touch on the social media stuff for a second because it is really entertaining, what you're doing. And I know this is sort of organic, but you like kind of have an idea of where that's going?
Nah, I don't know where it's going. And I think that's
the beauty of it, right?
Yeah. Everyone's got, I see a lot of guys and they've got this clear path to monetize or sell something or educate or promote something. And I'm just like, no, I don't even know why I'm doing this.
So, it's funny. If you were to sit down with, most of the time. If you were to sit down with like a social media team and be like, what should I do for running my social media? They'll tell you everything that you're doing, you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
but it works.
Do you know what? Do you know what's so successful by it though? Is it just so relatable?
Yeah.
Everything that I watch of your social media, I'm like, oh yeah, I've done that before. Yeah. Oh yeah, I've thought that before. Like the apprentice one you did the other day.
Yeah.
Like it just resonates so strongly with my experience with apprentices. Your shoulder thing the other day resonates so much with when I did my shoulder and my wrist. Like it's just real conversation.
It's real. It's just real life.
And that's like, what I think is missing. Like when I see a lot of social media stuff, I'm like, you're full of shit. And I think people can pick up if you're bullshitting or not, regardless of how good you are at it. I reckon people pick up on it and you'll get found out. So I just don't talk about shit I don't know about.
Yeah.
And I don't say something I don't believe.
Yeah, like we probably had to fake it till we made it with Passive House.
Definitely.
But like I'm very strong opinionated if you haven't realized, but I will I'll only ever get into an argument that like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like and I'll happily admit like we just had a podcast with Amelia Lee and I was like, she got me. I was like, checkmate, you win. Like
That was my favorite part of the podcast.
Yeah, it's like, like I think that's the hard part with like social media. It's just fake world.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all, oh, they must be doing so much. And I see people that have worked for me in the past and they're showing how good their stuff is. I'm like, that is nothing like you've produced.
Yeah.
It is so fake.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's important to kind of also understand that that a business account, personal account, like an account for a podcast, an account for an architect, they're different messaging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different messages. So an architect, for example, is not going to take the same strategy as what you've got.
Yeah.
I mean, although it'd be pretty fucking cool. If you're an architect out there,
mate,
that would be real.
I reckon you know who'd be the best candidate would be? Glenn Chamberlain.
Oh, yeah, Chamberlain Architects.
Yeah. Glenn's actually a really cool dude. Right? So I've worked for a lot of architects, and even in the Bink days, I like knew so many architects. I mean, I remember meeting Jeremy McLeod when he was like had this little studio behind his wife's fashion shop, right? And yeah, so seeing all these different personalities of people, like Glenn's a really good dude. And I sort of went toe to toe with him a little bit on one of his projects that I was building for him. I was just having a shit time.
Yeah.
You know, and I was a typical builder. I'm like, fucking architects, you know? And, but he, you know, he fronted up, he had the conversation, proved his point, and, you know, and persevered with me when I was like a stubborn, angry builder.
Yeah.
And we've got a great relationship now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and he's actually like a big fan of our stuff. Like, so he's always interacting with us.
Yeah, let's be clear. Architects, like we love working with architects. Like I feel they 100% have a space in the place that we operate within.
Yeah.
In fact, without them...
We've got to push boundaries. We poo-poo them a lot and take the piss out of them. But reality is we've got to change the narrative. I just don't think they've marketed themselves as an industry like... Only 2-5% of houses are designed by architects. It's got to be way higher. Like, then we need better built houses, and they're the forefront of making that change.
Yeah, like they are, but I'm going to sort of challenge that as well. Like, how many people can afford that, though, that service?
You've got to pay someone.
Yeah, but one of the things that I don't really understand in building is why are so many homes so unreliable? Like, even the architectural ones, like, they are unreliable. They don't necessarily last long, and it's going to be unreliable if you constantly reinvent the wheel every time you build a new house. I mean, you're constantly trying to deal with, and you know, you guys as builders in the passive house space understand the importance of junctions, sealing them, dealing with materials, meeting other materials. So one of the things that I've started doing, and I've built a little research prototype in my factory, is a bathroom. It's the one thing. It's the worst area of a house.
Not even
the whole bathroom. It's that corner where the shower is.
Yeah, it's
the worst area of the house.
And every trade when you do a bathroom renovation, every trade that goes for a full build goes through a bathroom.
Through the bathroom, right? And we just don't put enough effort. Like, why do we still roll slop on and call it waterproofing? Like, it's such a shit system.
Do you know,
slop.
I'm agreeing with you. Like, I'm agreeing with all of this, but I'd never thought about it or articulated it this way.
Yeah.
So you're developing some prototypes at
the moment. I'm doing some research. We've been doing it for about a year with a mate of mine.
Yeah.
Basically, I want to be able to build a house, give a warranty, and not worry about it. And be like, no.
There's some pretty good American systems out there.
There's like the zip system I've seen on for external stuff. Yeah. On the, you know, there's Weedy here that Bowen's have.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, I look, honestly, I haven't really dived into it too much. I've got, I think I've got a day coming up with Bowen's and Weedy's coming out to chat about their system, but I don't understand
Hills,
like fundamentally
Hills and
big
demo
picture stuff. Big picture stuff. Why are we building houses? And not to knock what you guys do awesome stuff, right? But it's custom. And what I'm saying is, if we want to change something in the industry, why we keep changing every single house that we build?
So you're saying it needs to be predictable and
on scale.
Yep.
Well,
repeatable,
like
predictable and
it's kind of what we're working with Alter Eco right now. Yep. Something similar.
You know, like Hiluxes, right? They do so well in Australia. Toyota Camrys do so well in Australia. Why?
Just
they're not great.
Toyota.
They don't look amazing.
79 series.
79 series. Now there's now that's in the other extreme. But I had one and then I reckon that's what actually caused my fucking shoulder to.
I sold mine 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So, oh man, they're just the best and worst thing. Like it's like
let's not talk about it.
Yeah. But so a Hilux is really attractive because it's unbreakable, because it's reliable. But we don't have a house equivalent to that. There's no Toyota in the building space. There's no one doing a Toyota in housing. There's plenty of people doing Alfa Romeos.
It's a systems approach, though. Like, and this is where why we build passive house. It goes back to a fundamental of physics. You can't change physics, whether you're here, South America, anywhere, Antarctica. The wall structure will change depending where you are. So the reliability is based on building science that you deal with water first.
Yep.
And that's it's a real to me. It's the most simplest answer. But again, going back to what you have talked about. Gets forgotten.
Yeah.
Like deal with water. Yeah. We deal with water, everything else will follow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I 100% agree with you, but in the space that you guys do it, it's
custom.
Unattainable for a lot of people.
But I have a strong opinion at the moment that building is unattainable for everyone unless you have one of these money trees that I don't know where they come from because I can't find one. It's so expensive. Building is so expensive.
It's ridiculously expensive. But also what happened was the volume game made people expect a lot more out of their houses. Like they wanted four bedroom this and three bathrooms and alfrescos and this and that. And they're willing to move out further for it. But they were getting, I remember you were getting a 30 something square house for like 160 grand.
Yeah.
And that's what gave the price a lot. That's what people refer to as the price of construction. But it also, from a performance, longevity, durability perspective, that become like cheap became a benchmark. If that makes sense. So,
They deleted eaves.
Yeah.
Like, it was like such a dumb thing to do from an energy perspective.
Well, not energy perspective, water management.
Water management.
You're allowing, like, bulk water to hit.
Oh, I like deleting eaves.
Really?
Yeah, I like the continual wrap from a straight down Monopoly frame. Frame over the top.
No, but you can still do that and then put
The method is different, yes.
Yeah. The final outcome definitely needs to be there.
I guess what you guys are doing is that performance stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's great. I love watching your videos, all the ceiling systems and everything that you guys are doing. But I'm looking at it from another perspective and going, this housing affordability crisis is not going to be solved by signing on more apprentices or increasing immigration or, you know, just, I don't know, buying more stuff
freezing
from China
the freezing the code.
Freezing the code. Right, which is another crazy concept. But I don't know. I'm just looking at them going, okay, if you look at, take F1 for example, they design everything right to the limit, right? And you guys are designing to the limit in customization and architecture. I'm saying, where's the limit on the bottom end? Like, how can you build something super reliably?
We need to improve the code to a standard that we know works and then that's the minimum standard and viability. So the code needs to lift so we have a minimum standard and the information's there. You can look overseas to North America, specifically Canada and even parts of Europe, and once we get those things sorted, then we can do that, because on scale what happens is you get 15 different rack companies coming, you get way more window companies that are all producing amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Therefore there's more competition, which brings price down. At the moment, we're still putting in shitty aluminium single glazed windows in houses. That doesn't help your brother's company, the UPVC, which is not much more expensive. It's probably, I've had it priced on a project, it was the same price.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's this.
Not single glazed aluminium. but
no,
they still get put in houses, and that's
no. But I'm saying that
the
UPVC aren't comparable with single.
No, if you compare it to like a similar U value window.
Yes.
So I'll say here for and what we did on one of our passive house projects with your brother, I thought for shits and giggles, let's go get aluminium double glazed windows priced to compare. I can tell you they're all the same price.
Yeah.
And it's just this huge.
Were they thermally broken or?
No. They won one company that's quite well known quoted me single glaze to make it look cheaper. I was like, I want this glazing. He was like, you don't need that. I was like, just price me that, please.
Yeah, right.
The other one produced what I asked, and then the other one, they just gave me double glazing. I was like, I'm not even bothered going back. They're all similar. Yeah. This house was certified at the end of the day, and your brother's windows were the same price. Now, we've got to wrap this up. Mindful moment.
Mindful moment.
So Mindful Moment is brought to you by MEGT, Australia's Apprenticeship Experts. Now, the whole idea of this concept is we're trying to come up with some ideas about bits of advice, bits and pieces about how you can improve on site or encourage.
I've got one.
You've got
I've
one?
I've got one. I do have one. So I think, and it probably does feed in nicely to a conversation we're having earlier on about you being more on site so you can actually have that relationship with Ben or your apprentices. Whereas I feel I haven't had that recently with some of my apprentices. And I'm actually working through with one of my fourth years at the moment, and we're getting a strategy together of how the next 10 months look about what and I've kind of set some metrics of what I think a good carpenter should be when they get qualified. So we're currently working through together on how we can plan that out over the next 10 months so we can hit – I've got 10 markers – of what I think would be a good carpenter, which I would expect a recently qualified tradesperson to do. Because in my opinion, it's all great to do your apprenticeship and it's all great to go to TAFE, but I think there is a there's a disconnect between the people delivering it, i.e. the builders and the carpenters, and I don't think there's enough education at the moment around training the trainers.
Yeah.
So you know, zero.
Yeah, yeah. So we've had some great conversations with MEGT, and we haven't solved the problem yet, right? So we've just brought this up. It's the start of this conversation.
And they're really keen to start that. They've identified this as an area too.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about how, you know, once we get more minds thinking about how we can be better trainers to our apprentices, I'm actually really excited about that. But so my mindful moment is actually, you know, my recommendation, take the time with your apprentices, even if you are a builder off-site, because this is something that I've learned recently or realised recently that I don't do enough. Take the time to train, because there's no point just getting that bit of paper that says pass, because it doesn't mean anything. Put some context to it, take the time to read through it, and then take the time to talk to the tradespeople on-site that are actually dealing with that apprentice and make sure that it is a pass.
Yeah.
A satisfactory pass.
We should be like, when we did our apprenticeships, you got graded. These days it's just you tick box to get passed.
Yeah.
He just gets passed no matter what, even if he fails. I think that's where the issues become. I don't know, MEGT are keen to really push this, and that's why we've got them on board as well. Like we want to help them solve the problem, and they want to solve the problem. They've identified it, and they're being proactive on it, and both of us have all of our apprentices with it just by chance as well.
It was actually really nicely, like a nice sort of play of events where all of our apprentices were through MEGT.
Yeah, we're presenting to them about how the Come On is a sponsor for this segment, and we should have just recorded the actual interview. Like it was kind of
– It was a really, really great conversation. Yeah, so. And now I've actually connected them with some other people, so hopefully there's, you know, a bigger flow-on effect with you know, how an organisation like MEGT can influence the new wave of tradespeople coming through. Yeah.
Don't you think, though, trade school should go a little bit backwards to what it used to be?
I think it should be personally, if you're doing a carpentry, it should be a five-year apprenticeship. Yeah. I think in the third, there's a lot of crap you can cut out in the apprenticeship system that you just don't need to know anymore.
Yeah.
Like one of the pet hates I have is they go do scaffolding, but they don't get a scaffolding license. So why bother teaching? If you're going to do it, give them the license.
Yeah.
I think at your third year, you should be forced to do a diploma. Pretty simple. So then by the end of it, at the fifth year, like an electrical apprenticeship or plumbing, you can go do your registration to be a licensed carpenter. Yeah. So you come out as a licensed carpenter.
Yeah.
If you fail it, you're not a carpenter. You're something else. But at the end of the day, at the end of an apprenticeship, I think that as a carpenter, you walk out with nothing. You walk out with a Cert 3 in carpentry. There's no difference from my wife going down to Bunnings, grabbing two nail guns and going, boom, I'm a carpenter. You have the same degree. There's nothing breaking that apart. And I think that
I'd love to see Nicole on site with two.
She'd be better. She'd be better than I would be. So, but I think that's the issue. Like as when that, and then people are going to argue that's going to increase prices in carpentry. You know what? It's someone you can hold accountable. They have a license, and you know what? They treat themselves with more respect because they feel that they're a little bit higher than.
You don't have to get rid of the carpenters that are the Cert 3. You just have become like an A grade. Yeah, you can become your apprenticeship as a Sparky and never get your A grade.
You just always
have to work for someone licensed.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Same as plumbing. It's plumbing. Like some people go do roofing. Some go do sewer and drainage. Yeah. Some people do like water. Like you don't have to do it all in carpentry too.
Yeah,
you can go away and go, I'm going to be a fucking gun fix carpenter. I'm not going to worry about learning framing, but I'm going to be so dialed into my processes with fixes and know everything about it, gear up for that, and then off you go. Yeah. Like that's what you become the expert at.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to know it all either.
No. Joel, good luck with the next.
How do we get onto you?
Phase of your carpentry building.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're on. You're
business
on social,
ownership kind of.
Yeah. Your social
thing.
Media, yeah. Facebook, Instagram, yeah. OnlyFans.
Instagram. Yeah.
Actually, if you want to laugh, follow Joel. What is it?
Joel Heidiville.
Joel Heidiville. It is amusing. You will have a chuckle. Awesome.
Thanks
Ben. Ben, you're awesome.
Thanks for impromptu like fourth guest here, or the second guest here today. Thanks guys.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.